Brunson, Sabonis, two-man game inside. Domas, dominant, dynamite inside on that one.
Not afraid, and he got some dog in him.
And the steal, they can tie it with a three. Murray, yes! A Murray miracle in the desert!
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse Podcast. My name is Brendan Nunes. Got my guy, co-host Hunter Patterson of The Athletic here. What's going on, Hunter? How you been, man?
Nothing much, bro. All is well. How you doing?
I am doing good. Doing good. Better than the Kings as of late. It's a little harsh. I feel like I started that last time, too. Probably similarly. They are 3-2 in their last five games, which is not the worst. But most recently, Sunday night, afternoon, loss, 3 p.m. tip to the Houston Rockets, 112-104. And I will say, not to start with excuses, the Rockets have been playing well. If they didn't blow a ridiculous lead to the Clippers, they would have come in having won five straight. They're a solid defense, but this is a game you're supposed to win from Sacramento's perspective. And it was a lot of the same issues. We're going to get into to spray threes at some point today. I think that's going to be a big part of our conversation and something that the just team has been talking about a lot. But turnovers were huge in this one, right? Similar to the Miami game, Houston's a team that really packs the paint. Part of the game plan is don't get too deep into the paint, play off 2 feet. And if you do, that will lead to turnovers. If you don't, I mean, and Domas, 9 turnovers in this one, not his season high, second on the season, actually. Season high is 11 against the Hornets, which you don't exactly love that it's against the Hornets and the Rockets that these games are happening against. Hornets. Rockets more excusable than the Hornets, but in general, I know I just kind of went over a couple things there, but how are you feeling after that Rockets loss coming right after that closer than it probably should have been Spurs game?
Yeah, one of the things I thought about after yesterday's loss was how easily it could have been 2 drop games if it wasn't for a fourth quarter, I don't want to say miracle, but close to it. Yeah. And you did mention a little bit just how well the Rockets have been playing. But one of the things that really struck me during the game, too, was how solid their young core is. Obviously, not counting Fred and Dylan Brooks. Possibly Dylan Brooks is only 28, but not really a part of the young core. And I mean, guys like Jalen Green being the oldest of that young bunch at only 22. Jabari Smith Jr. was playing pretty well, definitely wild. Thompson, one of the twins, he had a pretty decent game yesterday. But more than anything, from the Kings' perspective, it was just the worst three-point shooting night of the season thus far, 6-32. And the amount of turnovers they had was pretty inexcusable. Obviously, you mentioned Domas having 9 of them. And we'll get more into that, but as many turnovers as they had, as few threes as they made, it was kind of a recipe for disaster a little bit.
Definitely was. And you said you went back and watched those turnovers, right?
Yeah, bro. I mean, and one of the things that made me want to do it too was Mike during his press conference last night. He was talking about how well the Rockets packed the paint. And of the 12 turnovers that the Kings had last night, they had 9 that were in the half court and 10 really, but one of those was a DHO and no Rockets were in the paint at all. So if we take the DHO out and we don't include the 2 in transition, there were at least 3 Rockets players in the paint on each of those 9 turnovers they had in the half court, like I said, excusing the DHO. And you could see just how flustered the Kings were in trying to handle that. It's hard to operate, obviously, with that many people in the paint. Definitely got to give the Rockets credit for being as physical as they were, because I think if you're more physical early on in the game, you may be able to kind of set a precedent with the refs for how the rest of the game is going to be called. So you couple the amount of bodies they had in the paint, as sloppy as the Kings were being with the ball, and I mean, you got to kind of take hats off to the Rockets there.
Yeah, they really do play well. And it is kind of weird to me that you look at like Şengün's their back line and Jalen Green's in that starting lineup. Those two dudes are really bad defenders. and yeah. they still find a way to get it done. It's really like all the guys that you mentioned and those two vets of Van Vliet and Brooks are really damn good there too.
Yeah. And another person too, like Jabari Smith, obviously in Keegan's draft class, he was really impressive as far as defense goes. He wasn't having a big offensive night or anything like that, but he just seemed to always be in the right place at the right time. He had active hands. He was pretty good on help side. And he's, I want to say about 6'10". I'm not sure what his wingspan is, but it's probably at least his height. And he uses it and shows it throughout the game. Like you're not really going to get an easy shot with him in the vicinity.
Yeah, for sure. They have a squad, you know, and again, not to make excuses, but it's just, there is some credit due to Houston here, and Sacramento underperformed at home again. And before we get to the spray threes, I do want to talk about just their struggles at home a little bit, because it's pretty weird, man. They are, I believe it's 17, and let me make sure I got this right, 17 at 12 at home. That would put them 16th in terms of win percentage in the NBA. Now, yeah. if you go by straight, like, you know, what teams have less wins than them at home in the Western Conference, it's only Memphis, Portland, and San Antonio. But the Kings still have 12 home games. I don't think a lot of teams still have 12 home games, because also not many teams. It's really the top four of OKC, Denver, Minnesota, and the Clippers have less home losses than the Kings at this current point too. So the Kings still do just have a lot of home games still on their schedule. But if they kept going at the pace they're at, they'd be 7-5, right? For example, at home in these final 12, say that takes you up to 24-17. Am I doing that right? I think so. And you know,
definitely,
like
I got to interject a little bit. You know, I'm not the math guy, so I said, but don't.
That's fine. That's fine. I think I got that down. But like, typically, you want to be better at home, and the Kings this season have really felt like they've been better on the road than they have been at home. And actually, their win percentage is better at home, but typically, there's a decent difference between the two with good teams. And the Kings have really struggled at home this season. A lot of their big losses, whether you want to say, as I kind of just scroll through here, really bad losses to New Orleans at home. And New Orleans is a good team, but they just got totally smacked. There's a almost 20-point loss to Portland. That one's actually on the road, sorry. But a Charlotte loss at home. Orlando game that went to double overtime. I believe that was without Paolo Banchero. The Kings ended up winning, but it went to double overtime. There's a loss to Indiana at home.
Paolo may have been playing that game.
He might have.
This was a home game, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're right. Paolo did play. He hit 43, actually. He went crazy in that game.
Yeah.
But yeah, Orlando took you to double overtime at home, which Orlando's an okay team. Lost to Indiana at home without Tyrese. This is right after they traded for Pascal Siakam, but he wasn't on the roster yet or wasn't available yet. There's, like I said, Detroit. There's the San Antonio game getting close. The Miami, Chicago, Houston are the three most recent. And some of these are going to happen throughout the course of the season, but there's really too many at this point. And I have a couple of clips are going to play throughout the pod here, but the first one I wanted to kind of get to here before I get your thoughts on it is Malik today at practice, being Monday, the day after their Sunday loss to Houston. And this one kind of runs for a sec. It's about 2.5 minute clip and talks about a little bit of Malik's frustrations just from yesterday, but eventually gets to their home and road differential here. So here's Malik from Monday's practice.
Yesterday, you were kind of getting a little fed up with the way you guys were playing. Is that pretty accurate to say in the board?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Especially when we was up a little bit against an under 500 team. Even though they're in the NBA, we definitely supposed to beat them teams. And that's been our struggle all year. And I think our struggle all year being at home, too, as well. We're not performing how we're supposed to in front of the home crowd. And we know that. And yeah, that was pissing me off yesterday. Yeah.
Do you want kind of other guys to feel that same?
They do. They just don't express it the way I do. Because I'm more open about things. And just my personality is a little out there, I think. Other guys are a little closed in. So they feel the same way. They just don't express it like me.
Some guys are talking about playing up to the level of their opposition. Is it as simple as that when you can see a team come in here and maybe it gets a little bit lax?
Yeah, for sure. It's everybody, man. Everybody. Equipment manager, like Giannis said, everybody got to get better, man. So we'll do. I think we'll turn it around. If not, we're not going to be in the postseason. So it's whatever we want.
You talk about the struggles with the under 500 teams. Tomorrow you have an obviously over 500 team coming in here in Milwaukee Bucks. You know, what is the mentality going into that game, you know, especially coming off this loss last night? Where's the pulse of the team in trying to, you know, get a win here on your home court?
To hit first, that's always be our mentality, man, when we win. Hit first, play harder than other teams. Win 50-50 balls, get offensive rebounds, things like that, man. Just play harder than other teams is what our focus be. But sometimes, you know, it don't happen. But we'll be all right. I think we'll be ready for tomorrow.
Do you feel that you play better, kind of like you said, playing up to your talent, playing up or playing lower? Do you
as
feel,
a team?
Yeah.
Yeah, as a team-wise, I think we play better against better competition. I don't know why. I wish I knew. We probably would have had it figured out by now. But I think we'll figure it out. But like I said, if not, we're not going to be in the postseason.
Do you have any idea kind of what could have led to some of the like home struggles this year?
Nah, man, that's a good question. Like I said, if we had that figured out, I think we'll be way better at home. But I don't know. Looking forward to it.
Is it frustrating that some of the things this year, it's like tough to pin down?
Yeah, man, it is. But you can't wait too much on it, man, because you got a game the next day or 2 days after that. So, luckily, we got 82 games, so we can have a quick memory and forget things like that. So, yeah, we'll be all right.
I mean, like Malik said, they definitely play up and down to their competition as a team, but they have a lot of losses to under 500 teams and more losses at home than they should. And like you guys heard, I tried to ask him, like, any idea why? And this isn't the first guy that's gotten asked to. And pretty much there's no answer, you know, and I think that's the most frustrating thing for me. And I asked him if it's frustrating for him and, you know, he gave a good PR answer. But like, that's my whole thing. I don't know if you have any theories or anything about the inconsistency of this team, but like, it's just theories right now because nobody seems to be able to pin down exactly what's going on here.
You said it, bro. I think it would all just kind of be theories and what you think, but maybe there's just a certain comfort level that comes at home, and at a certain point it becomes a disadvantage because you're too comfortable, you get too lax, and you don't play with maybe as much pressure as you may feel on the road. And pressure for them could possibly be a good thing, but at this point in the season, every game should come with its own bit of pressure. So there shouldn't be any lapses in judgment, any lapses in passion or whatever you need to be ready to go for these games. And one thing Malik said too, like he was saying, they need to come out and hit first. I feel that, but they need to make sure they're hitting the whole game. They need right. to keep swinging and not just be at a point where they're like ducking and dodging. They need to be the one throwing the first punch each quarter all throughout the game, because there have been games where they came out and they hit first and then they're not swinging when it matters down the stretch.
For sure. I actually asked Harrison and coach a little about it today, because we've heard Domas before be like, you know, obviously they play really fast, but maybe they could benefit from slowing it down when they're ahead. And coach and Harrison both kind of shut that down. They were like, Harrison specifically was like, you know, I think it's a lot of people do have that thought of maybe you should slow it down when you have the lead, but he thinks it's really just valuing possessions. It's not turning the ball over. In that Houston game, he said specifically, imagine that, you know, half those turnovers are instead missed shots and we get to at least get back a little bit on defense and kind of set up. So, and then Mike Brown's aspect was, you know, if that's what got us the lead in the first place, then we shouldn't go away from it. Like, that's our identity. Let's keep rolling with that. And I think that's fair. That makes sense to me. But I think that's also the nature of playing a really fast paced brand of basketball, is you could come back from leads real quick because you can get up three triples in a minute you know, but you can blow leads really quickly too, because the other team's going on a run and you run down and throw up a, you know, kind of open three with 16 seconds on the shot clock like that, and they go score again. It happens quick. You know what I mean? So it's weird, man, but I think that's been the biggest thing for me is, and I have, if I had to make a theory, it'd be the same thing as you with the home and away stuff, that maybe you could be a little too comfortable. Like, I think when you're on the road, there's this aspect of it's you against everybody in that building.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make my own energy. Like, I'm about to bring it tonight. And you could get a little too comfortable at home. And again, theories, but that's literally all we can do right now because nobody seems to have any clue on this team. But at this point, inconsistency is kind of just who they are. You know, it's part of this year's identity of this group, and they could go on a run at any point, and it's just about playing your best basketball at the right time. But I don't have the most faith in them going on a run right now. You know, I think they have like a 6-game win streak, a 4-game win streak, and then 2 3-game win streaks. And on the other end, I think there's I mentioned this earlier, but there's not very many long loss streaks either. I want to say there's a 4, a 3, and then they haven't lost more than 2 in a row all season long. So I don't have the most faith that, you know, they're going to say they go beat the Bucks and the Lakers. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm feeling great about the Knicks right after that, you know?
Right. I just checked it and they definitely don't have more than a 4-game losing streak this season, but the amount of like 2-game losing streaks and like 2 losses in 4 or 5 games, it's pretty up there.
Yeah, which is going to happen a bit, and it's just kind of the nature of being a very mid team, really, to be honest, you know?
It is.
But they make their money on the offensive end, and that's because they're so bad defensively. But when they've scored at least 120 this year, they're 31-4. And if they don't reach the 120 mark, they're 5-23, which again, I think Mike Brown would point to, that means we need to be better defensively. In right. my mind, I'm like, well, you're not. So just make sure you put up the points.
Yeah.
And the spray three, how many times do you think we've heard the term spray three? It's not like this season a bunch, but this last post-All-Star break.
Post-All-Star break, bro, I would say upwards of like 30, 40 times maybe.
Yeah, it's been a lot. And I asked Mike today to kind of just define spray threes. Mm-hmm. And it, because in general, I think that we have a good idea, you know, it's hitting the paint and spraying out to shooters is where that comes from. But when they're categorizing it, and Mike Brown comes out after the Houston loss and says, we only had 10 spray threes in this game. And I'm like, okay, so when you're categorizing it, what specifically makes it a spray three or not a spray three? And he kind of dove into that a little bit here. So I'm going to play that clip and then we'll give our thoughts on it here.
Spray threes and yeah. sort of categorizing it. Just like, what is the black and white definition of what a spray three is?
Anytime you touch the paint. Now, we have early sprays that we like, meaning that if I'm on the wing and I start to drive, because sometimes teams overhelp early, just make the simple pass or push what we call push ahead pass to the next guy because his defender came in to help stop the ball. Now that guy could shoot it, or what Houston does is they're really good at crowding that paint. When you get off it like that, they really close out hard to you. And so when that ball comes to me, I got a guy closing out to me. Now that's when the snap drive is available. And the snap drive is not just always available for me to score it, because they may still be there from collapsing the first time, but the snap drive may be now I take 1, 2, get in that paint, and now I spray it, and that guy maybe kicks it, you know. So, again, we have touching the paint, whether it's off of a drive from a pick and roll or an ISO, off of a drive from a snap drive, off of a roll because I catch in the pocket and everybody collapses, off of a rebound. You know, sometimes you get a rebound. If you got 2, 3 guys around you and you're a smaller guy, sometimes you just got to play off two and kick it. And kick it, because if you got 2 or 3 guys around you, somebody on the perimeter is open. And so those are the different ways you can spray a basketball that we're not doing a good job of, that we have to be better at than what we have been the last three games.
How much does shooting struggles? You know, obviously Kevin's kind of had some moments, Keegan a little bit as well. How much does maybe that play a part in not seeing that action as much?
Whether guys are making shots or not, you still have to play the right way. And to me, that's part of playing the right way. But that's why I say at the end of the day, you got to defend and you got to win the possession game, because shots aren't going to always go in. You know, when you go back and you look at the shots that we had last night, we had some open looks from the right shooters. The ball just didn't go in. And so what does that mean? It means you got to be better defensively, and you have to try to win the possession game where you can't send them to the free throw line, play after play after play, and you take care of the basketball. Because if you turn it over, especially as athletic as they are, they're going to get out and they're going to make you pay in transition, which is what happened. They're going to get some easy baskets with their quickness and their ability to attack, with their athleticism off of our turnovers. So, and then you can't give up offensive rebounds. So those are the areas that, you know, high-level teams win most nights, defensively and then the possession game, because I've been with high-level teams and the ball's not going to always go in, even if you are playing the right way. Just the nature of the game.
Anybody that might be watching on the YouTube side, Mike Brown's always animated a little bit, so yeah. Definitely recommend that one. But what stood out to you and kind of what Mike was laying out there?
Even apart from the spray threes, there are too many times I think they turn the ball over and are either complaining at the ref about why they turned it over, someone maybe fouled them, or kind of not necessarily bickering amongst themselves, but like, it all it takes is a second for the ball to get down court, and while you're talking with your teammate about the miscommunication that maybe caused the turnover, the opposing team is down the court and basically already getting a bucket off your turnover. And that third quarter, bro, there was 11 points off turnovers for the Rockets, and they had 20 points in the paint. And that's literally just the third quarter where the game kind of got away from the Kings. And on those 11 points off turnovers, the Kings committed 7 turnovers, which was more than the field goals that they have for that quarter. They have 4 field goals in the third. They had 7 turnovers and 9 fouls. So, yeah, it's – for one, they should obviously value each possession and try to be turning the ball over less. But when you do turn the ball over, you have to really make it a point to not allow your turnovers to be turned into points by the opposing team.
Yeah, and, you know, those – Kings transition defense, not good. Synergy has them 27th in opponent points per possession on those plays. They've never been good at it. I mean, none of their defensive stuff really looks good, to be honest. But you can't make it harder on yourself. When offense is what you're supposed to be good at, you can't be turning the ball over like that. Mm-hmm. And those spray threes are just kind of everything to their offense. You know, it's he kind of laid out 4 different types of sprays there, right? Of like just hitting the paint and kicking out. And the second could be, say, the guy that gets that pass, attacks the closeout, and then makes another read from there after hitting the paint. There's kind of the short roll where, you know, they're running a pick and roll and just giving it to Domas after only going halfway to the basket, maybe around free throw line, nail, whatever. And then Domas makes plays from there that he's really good at. Or after offensive rebounds, you get a board. They call them dagger threes. The Kings do that. You know, you get a board and some guys could fall asleep on the other team, just kind of ball watching, hoping to get back in transition on the other end, or you just lose track of people when the ball goes up and you can find shooters from there. So those are kind of the 4 sprays that at least Mike laid out there. And I think it's super important to their offense. I will say, I don't think that like Keegan and Kevin and Harrison are great at attacking a closeout and then making a pass from there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they'll make the next swing, but I think attacking and playmaking is still something that could use a little bit of progress. And it's part of why like Davion has been really good recently. He can get past guys and make plays. Keon to an extent, you know, but really Malik and De'Aaron are the 2 guys from the perimeter that are so good at that. And if you have both of them out there with Domas, you got 3 damn good playmakers that are all capable of doing that.
and Malik was the first person to come to mind. Obviously, Fox is elite at most phases of the game offensively, but specifically what Malik can do when they're in like one of the four ways you can have a spray three, like you just mentioned, being able to, someone kicks it to you, you attack, and then you kick it to another person. Malik instantly came to mind on that because he's once again elite at doing that. And there's, it kind of goes back to the point, bro, where Mike has not necessarily been like begging for help from the front office, but there's like, there would be more opportunity to do the things he wants to do if he had the personnel to do it with. And spray threes, there's, like you just said, there's four different ways to get them based on Mike's answer. And one of the ways would be a lot easier, being attack and then kick to someone else if he had the personnel for it. And there are challenges with HB doing that, with Keegan, though he has made a pretty big step offensively this year. And obviously Kevin as well. So, I mean, some of these things that Mike has been trying to drill home all season, and we're barely 20 games left in the season, possibly the reason they're not that great at it is because the personnel they have is not necessarily crafted for that.
Right, which is kind of a theme of this season. And again, long-term wise, I think that's fine. I get the long-term view of roster construction, being patient, waiting for the right guy to take a swing on. So I get it, but you didn't do yourself any favors when it comes to production this season, at very least. And a lot of it does come down to those three dudes. And those other guys need to be shooters out there, obviously. Like you look at Keegan and Kevin, those are kind of the right other guys in my mind for offensively, even though I just mentioned the playmaking thing. Like, they shoot the crap out the ball, and they move well, they cut. And when you're kicking out, when you're spraying out to shooters, when you're spraying out the ball, it needs to be two shooters, two guys that are going to knock down those shots. And Keegan and Kevin do fit that a bit. They've been struggling. And I forget what made me think of this, but Mike Brown pregame was like really complimentary of Dylan Brooks. And he got asked specifically about Dylan Brooks. Right. It wasn't out of nowhere, right? And talked about like that energy being really important and how that can kind of get a team going. He talked about how like they had that in Golden State with Draymond. Mm-hmm. And at some point he mentioned, you know, when there's a guy on the other team that you feel like you can target, that brings you into the game with a sense of confidence. And I'm like, Mike,
we
know who you're talking about, bro. Like, and I feel bad about Kevin Huerter because I feel like I've been hammering this point home, but it's crazy how much teams attack him. And I do want to add, it's not just him though. Like, Malik is, it's all the rotations that happen after the fact, right? Everybody talks about being on a string and they're just not doing that. And that goes to everybody. Like, Kevin would look a lot better if he actually had a rim protector behind him.
Yeah.
You know, so like, it's not all on Kevin. Like, Keegan has his up and down moments. Harrison Barnes can't get through a screen this season. You know, De'Aaron Fox has moments where it's like, you look amazing out there, and other moments where it's like, God, that was a really bad closeout. You just totally let him get middle there. Like, nobody is blameless when it comes to the defense, really. But I don't know. I guess they do have to find ways to get better. But again, I'm of the belief of this team is offense, and not to just throw the defense out the window. I think Mike Brown's quote recently was something along the lines of like, you got a kid good at, I'm going to mess up the classes, but he said, you got a kid good at history and bad at science. You're not just going to give up on the science. Like, I guess, coach, that's a crazy metaphor, but I get what you're saying, you know? So I agree with that, but also lean into your strengths and make sure that you're putting up points, that you're getting these spray threes out there. And Domas has 9 turnovers in that game against Houston, the game against Miami, other team that really packs the paint. De'Aaron has 7 turnovers, season high. Kings don't do very well when De'Aaron's turning the ball over like that. And, you know, they generate these type of shots. They're 2nd in catch and shoot 3-point attempts per game, but they're 20th in percentage. They move the ball well, 6 in assists. And when shots go down, it helps, you know, above 40% from three at or above 13-5. Even 35 to 40%, 15-3. But then you get to less than 35%, they're 8-18. You narrow that down even more, less than 30%, they're 4-10. They've lost their 7 worst percentage games from three, all 7 so far this year, because again, they just can't really defend. And so they have to figure out a way to get these shots, and spray threes does kind of feel like the name of the game for this team.
Yeah. I also think too, in that same vein a little bit, as much pressure as Domas has to be the lead facilitator on the team and get as many guys involved as he does. For one, like De'Aaron had one assist last night, and I think it came in the second half. Not sure if it was the third or fourth, but obviously we're past the deadline, so there's not anything that can be done to the roster at this point, but you kind of just wish that there was. I mean, there's Malik who comes off the bench and plays late in game situations, but you kind of wish that there was another facilitator who could take that pressure off of Domas and kind of alleviate the pressure on Fox as well. And obviously they have one who they traded for Domas, but yeah, that, and then obviously you think about potentially someone next to Domas who could be either a rim protector or at least someone to offer some type of resistance at the rim, because I think teams, as you mentioned, Mike said, are aware of not only switches, but the fact that there's not going to be a ton of rim pressure once you break past your primary defender.
Right. And yeah, I mean, it's things you could try to figure out in the offseason. I will say the playmaking thing, I feel like typically that's your backup point guard. And
yeah,
just like, you know, I said Davion's not bad at it as a like tertiary piece, but when he's your main guy out there, it can be a little tough. But they've gone with these three guard lineups a lot in the second unit. When De'Aaron's not out there, they go to Davion, Malik, and Keon. Keon's been playing over Chris Duarte recently. And I feel like those have been working pretty well. We've even seen like Fox playing with Keon and Malik out there. But what have you thought of kind of the three guard lineups they've been rolling with recently?
They've been fun. And I would say fun for better over worse in most situations. They do obviously have their limitations because, granted, Davion's been shooting it really well lately. Keon is a pretty decent catch and shoot guy, but the spacing could possibly be better if you had guys who were more knockdown shooters. And defensively, I think they're solid. Keon and Davion, you know, that's like one thing you can for sure count on as far as effort and having the defensive principles down that the Kings and Mike Brown want. But yeah, I mean, they ultimately are fun, but have limitations, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And like, I think Keon is just straight up a good shooter, but he's not at the point where he's going to get that respect from opposing defenses. Like, he's still got to prove it at the NBA. And I think that's fair and understandable from defenses. And Davion gets totally left alone, but he's knocking him down now, bro. Like, I forget exactly what it was. I think he's around 50% since the start of January.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not left and right misses. You know what I mean? Every time, by the way, for listeners, that Davion throws up a three, Hunter and I look at each other.
For sure, we do.
Every time he throws up a three. And depending on if it's a make or miss, one of us will look at each other first.
Yeah.
But
sometimes too, if it's a miss, I'm not even.
Yep. Yep.
You sit to my
I'll
right.
I'll get your attention, though. I'll get your attention.
Yes, I'm usually like looking to my left, not even paying attention. But he's
not missing left and right anymore. They're not ugly ass. Right. Like early in the year, he's like,
damn,
practically shooting wedgies. It's off the side of the backboard. And I'm probably talking about like two shots, but those were happening, you know? And now I feel like they're kind of front and back.
Yeah. And there was, I want to say it was the Spurs game last week where he actually was he sought out a three, which is something that I haven't seen from him a ton this season. Last season maybe in spurts, but he actively was, I want to say he and Domas were doing kind of a DHO situation, and he like readjusted to be able to shoot the ball. And if he were able to consistently put that pressure on defenses to respect him from three-point range, that would open the floor up a lot for the rest of his teammates when they're all out there together. So hopefully he can continue and keep this confidence up.
Start of February, 50% from three on two a game. And, you know, small sample size, take it for what you will. But I think that it's looked a lot better. I would guess that, I mean, I think confidence is a big thing in everybody's shot. And when that starts to go down, I'm sure you start to feel a little bit better out there. I didn't have in my notes to do a pulse performer, but I think that we should. And this is probably, can we just agree to go Davion and Keon here?
For sure.
All right. So pulse performer of the week is going to be and Davion Mitchell. Both guys playing really, really well. Keon has played upwards of the minutes from these last three games, 17 minutes, just under 18 against Houston. 17 and a half against the Spurs. I accidentally got this repeating here.
Now, I was about to say, I feel like my heart rate is going up now.
I know. Got me stressing out. 17 and a half against the Spurs, 14 against the Lakers. He didn't play against Chicago, which Mike Brown said after, I got to find a way to get him out there, and he has. And then obviously that game against Minnesota with no De'Aaron where he ends up starting. They are 4-0 when Keon starts. He's been playing well. Davion, as we went through, also. And I think it helps him defensively, obviously, like you mentioned. But those two guys are really interesting to me to watch because they play defense so differently, but they're both effective. Like, Davion is physical. He's going to annoy the shit out of you by just bodying you. And Keon is going to be nonstop poking at the ball.
Yeah,
he's a very, like, handsy defender. And sometimes that could get him in a little bit of foul trouble, but I think for the most part, he does a good job of not let that get in the way all too much. But they're very different defenders. Keon's better at getting through screens. Davion's better in isolation situations. And I think having that variety, and when I asked about that three-guard lineup earlier in the week, I think it was Mike Brown, maybe it was somebody else that mentioned, like, it gives them some switchability out there too. And, you know, it's interesting because if the three is, like, typical sized three, then maybe it's a little tough. But if you got all three similar sized dudes out there, what's the difference? Who's switching on to who? In a way, you know, but those two guys have been balling.
Yeah, I was about to say, I trust Keon against guys, obviously not, maybe not like somebody who's a 6'9", 6'10" type wing, but if you have like a 6'6", 6'7" kind of guy out there, like I would trust Keon in most situations because of how you described him as a defender and the things he's able to do. I think once again, I gotta look up some wingspans at this point. I wasn't sure about Jabari's, not sure about Keon's, but he uses his length really well for his size, I would say. So I definitely trust Keon in those situations.
Apparently, Keon measured in at the combine just under 6'5", 6'8 and a half wingspan. Just under 6'5 also sounds a little kind to me. Yeah, I think it's actually just under 6'3".
Okay.
Okay, so no, it's just the difference of barefoot and in shoes. Yeah, he's about 6'5 in shoes.
Respect. We got to count the in shoes.
Yeah. I mean, how often? You're never playing without shoes, right? You know? Mike Miller for a possession or something, but, you know. We talked a lot about Malik Monk earlier, too. I do kind of want to spend the last part of this just giving him props and acknowledging that he should probably be sixth man of the year. You know, he's the odds-on favorite pretty much everywhere. After that, you go to Naz Reid, who's been balling, by the way. Like, he went insane in that game against Cleveland. He's starting now with Towns out, so maybe that'll affect things a little bit, but I think he's already at the point where he'll still be eligible. I think you just have to play more games coming off the bench than you did in the starting lineup to technically be eligible. But if you start, like, if the number's close, I would imagine that still affects the voters' decisions a little bit. But Naz Reid right there, Caris LeVert would be next. And then you get to Bobby Portis, Norm Powell, Tim Hardaway Jr. There is Bogdan Bogdanovich in there. Jordan Clarkson has been starting a lot of games as of late. I would think that makes him close to ineligible, not officially, but technically, at least in my mind. But Malik's been balling, man. From bench players, again, guys that have played at least 40 games coming off the bench, he's second in points behind Bogdanovich. He's at 15.7. Bogey's at 16.8. But Malik's more efficient, 45 from the field compared to 43 for Bogey, and right around same three-point percentage. And then assists, again, bench players at least 40 games off the bench, second to TJ McConnell. he's right there, and he's got 15 games of at least 20 points and 5 assists. He has big performances. We saw that game against Minnesota where he just totally balled out. Like, I think the spark that he brings them is something different. Like, does he give you – it almost gives me, and tell me if you feel this at all, like Lou Will, Jamal Crawford type of vibes.
Yeah. I'm not even mad at the comparison because he does things that I don't want to say the starters aren't capable of, but the fans react to it in a way that you would think he is the absolute best player on the team. I don't think – maybe JaVale. JaVale can get sure. a reaction out of the crowd for sure. But Malik just has kind of this the way he carries himself, the confidence he has. I think everyone in the arena who's there watching the games is aware of it, and they pick up on the way he just is that guy for this team. And maybe almost like a little bit of an emotional leader. He's really vocal. You can hear him getting on his teammates, talking to the refs, talking to other players, even other coaches sometimes. And none of those things can be quantified with stats necessarily, but you mentioned the amount of 20-point games and 20.5 assist games he's had, over 20-point games this season for the Kings. And he is someone who, if he's not coming off the bench for the Kings are a completely different team. And hopefully voters factor that in, because if he's not out there, this is not the same Kings team at all.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you. And De'Aaron got asked, I believe this was after, let's see, what would be their most recent win? This either after the, it's got to be the San Antonio game.
Yeah.
When De'Aaron was asked about this.
I think so.
But yeah, I asked him about Malik, and Mark Haynes also asked him about, you know, who would be your sixth man of the year pick?
Yeah.
Good game for Malik. Just how much does his secondary playmaking provide for you guys, and how much have you seen him embrace that bench role?
It's been big for us. I mean, starting last year, I feel like people didn't know how good of a playmaker he was or how creative he could be with the ball, because all they saw him pretty much do in his career and then in college was score. And I feel like he's grown in that aspect, and he knows that he's one of the best pick and roll players in the league, and he embraces that. We try to put him in position for him to be able to make plays or score for us. And I mean, he was big tonight coming in the first quarter and playing like 5 or 6 minutes, and I think he had like 9, 2, and 3 or something like that. So he's big for us, especially when we don't start the game well, or even when we do start games well. Just having that basically like a sixth starter coming off the bench is huge for any team.
Yeah, and obviously you don't have a vote at the end of the year, but in your opinion, who would be the sixth man of the year right now?
I mean, I don't even think it should be close, honestly. Who won? I don't even remember who won it last year, to be honest. But I feel like he should have won it last year, and I think he's long and away the front runner for sixth man of the year. Like, it shouldn't even be close.
It was Brogdon last year, for what it's worth. But, I mean, I'm with De'Aaron here, and I wouldn't expect him to say anything differently. Obviously, it's his right. guy. And I asked Malik, it was probably that same day, if he cares at all about winning Sixth Man of the Year. And, yeah. you know, started with, I know that winning's the main thing. And he's like, yeah. Like he started with, you know, what did Fox say?
Like, yeah.
Clearly he had just face. Heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. When you asked him, he was kind of like, you know, I'm a Sixth Man. But
right.
he, obviously, like you said, De'Aaron not only is riding with him because he's his teammate currently, they've been friends for however long, went to college together, but it feels not necessarily close at this point. And I think it should also be weighted the amount of games where he's kind of carried them down the stretch. And he just consistently is that guy who comes in and, like De'Aaron said, is a sixth starter off the bench.
Definitely. I mean, he's closing games more often than not. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that matters to him more than starting. Because I think Mike Brown really values, not think, I know Mike Brown really values his production off the bench. And, you know, there's games where Kevin isn't available and they've gone to Chris Duarte even. Yeah. And Mike Brown has said it's harder to replace what Malik does off the bench than just plug somebody into that starting lineup. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, De'Aaron comes off, Malik checks in. You always want at least one of those guys on the floor because Domas's playmaking is great. It's different from a perimeter player, somebody that can get past their defender, sort of collapse the defense, and those spray threes. You know, I think the number the Kings can offer is right around $17 million annually. I'll work on getting the exact number here, but the three teams with the most cap space this offseason are the Orlando Magic, Philadelphia 76ers, and the Detroit Pistons. Do you worry about any of those teams throwing 20 mil plus at Malik?
I, right off the bat, I'm going to say no to the Pistons. All due respect to anyone who's a Kings fan. Anyone who's a Pistons fan possibly watching. But
yeah, we got a lot of those, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But the Sixers, possibly, I think, depending on what Buddy status is and whether he ends up coming back or not, could possibly play a factor for them. But Malik in Philly off the bench, that's like the only situation. I think the Magic have some guys that they're probably still interested in developing off the bench. Anthony Black comes to mind. But yeah, part of me wonders if he would be willing to take possibly a pay cut to stay here. But then again, it's like, who knows how many contracts you'll be able to get in the league. Like, I don't blame anyone for cashing out for the most part. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the summer goes.
Yeah, and I don't know. Orlando's definitely the one that stands out to me there. A team that's really good on defense. They don't have like guard creators like that. You know, I know like you said, they just got Anthony Black. Maybe he'll eventually be that guy. Markelle Fultz is, I think, turned into a really solid backup point guard. Jalen Suggs is balling, but I think having that playmaking could be really big for them. And they have the defensive pieces around them too. That one interests me. And I believe the Spurs are projected to have some money here too, where they can get about to, this according to Spotrac, Keith Smith, about to the 18-20 mark. Okay. And, you know, 20 from the Spurs might be a little intriguing. And for what it's worth, the Kings number, it starts at 17.4, and it's a 4-year 78 would be the max they could offer, which still you're right around that 20 a year mark, right? And so if San Antonio's number is also 20, I would guess Sacramento would be more appealing. But I mean, some guys might be a little interested in, shit, I can go play with Wemby?
Yeah.
You know, and with Pop.
Yeah, those are two selling points. Obviously, like the Spurs, you may not be, I would hope any team Malik goes to, if it's not coming back here to the Kings, they allow him to be himself. But yeah, honestly, too, if I'm his agent, I'm looking at what Austin Reeves got, and I'm like, maybe we could do something in that ballpark, possibly. But I don't know, that'll definitely be probably one of the most interesting storylines this offseason for the Kings, for sure.
It definitely will. Reeves was 4 years 56, I guess.
I lowballed Malik.
Malik will definitely make a decent bit more than that. But like, I don't know, that 20 mil mark, I'm a little unsure. Yeah. You know, I'm very torn where I'm like, I could see him being a 17, 18 mil player. Mm-hmm. I could also see a team. And again, there's not many teams that really have the space to do it, but I could see a team thinking he's a 22, 24. Borderline 25, you know.
I'd be happy for him, bro.
I would too. He's talked about before, like, his perspective of, I was almost out of the league.
Yeah.
And he's talking about previous stuff with Charlotte, and that didn't go great, and he ended up landing it with the Lakers and then eventually to the Kings. And I do wonder if there's value in, like, this is one of the places that he's really gotten more established, mm-hmm. you know. And obviously the Lakers are kind of the first part of that, but I'm curious about that because I asked him today, how do you think you've gotten better from this year compared to last? And he just straight up said, like, I think it's just usage. Like, I think I've been doing this the whole time. And then I was like, well, what does it say about the coaching staff that they're willing to give you that opportunity? And he followed up with, I think I deserve it. based off how I played last year, which isn't exactly the answer I was expecting, but he's not wrong at all. I think that's actually totally accurate. But I wonder if there's an aspect of everybody focuses on De'Aaron, his relationship with De'Aaron, which I'm a little uncertain on how close they really are. You know, like they played together in college. I think there's a familiarity. They enjoy being around each other, but I'm a little unsure how close they really, really are, you know, off the court. But I think also Mike Brown plays a big part here I think that Mike and Malik seem to have a good relationship. They're both dudes that are blunt and going to tell you exactly how it is. Mm-hmm. And they both could say shit to each other's face and not take anything personally, you know? So I do wonder if Mike, along with De'Aaron and just being a little established here, helps in the process at all. But it's going to be a big, big decision for, or just thing to monitor in this offseason for the Kings.
I think definite. First off, too, glad you looked that Austin Reeves thing up. I, for whatever reason, was thinking that he was closer to 100.
I had no clue the number off the top of my head, to be fair. So.
Yeah, bro, I don't know what made me think that. And that's what I was alluding to, like possibly 20-ish a year. But, I think as much as we've seen him and Mike kind of go back and forth and publicly sometimes disagree and then be able to behind closed doors get on the same page and not really trip off what happened the night or game before, I think that should definitely factor in. And then to your point, the question you asked him earlier, like this is probably not even probably, this is the most opportunity he's gotten from a coach and staff. And I think Mike possibly saw something in him that other coaches around the league hadn't. And for him to help bring that out of Malik is something that I think I would definitely think Malik values going into this offseason and shopping around teams with free agency. I'm also curious, though, why don't you think him and De'Aaron aren't close like that?
No, I just don't. Like, I'm not saying that they're not. I'm just not sure. Everybody talks about them like they're just the best of friends. And yeah. I just don't we don't know as well. Like, I don't know how much these dudes are hanging out off the court, for example. Like, I think they got great chemistry on the court. I'm sure they enjoy being teammates with each other. But I feel like people just throw around the word best friend. And I'm like, guys, we don't really know. You know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
And we also haven't heard him be Uncle Malik for Baby Rain yet. We have heard Uncle Keith.
I mean, is Malik, from De'Aaron's perspective, like, is Malik really the one babysitting your kid? You know,
I knew you were about to say that.
Yeah. Like, come on, bro.
Probably not. No,
Malik probably don't want to do that either, bro.
Yeah. But hopefully, between just his relationship with De'Aaron, relationship with Mike, the way these past 2 years have gone and how he's been able to grow as a facilitator and with the amount of usage that he's had, that will kind of factor into his decision.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, I'm catching you off guard here. I didn't plan you for this, but I'm going to name a couple guards. They're going to be free agents this year.
All right, let's do it.
You think they're going to make more or less than Malik, all right?
All right.
Klay Thompson.
Man.
Tough one off the jump.
Yeah, because I'm going to say just based on nostalgia alone, he could. But then at the same time, if we're being realistic, who's playing better at this time? I would not give him more money than I'd give Malik.
If you're Orlando, who'd you rather have?
If I'm Orlando, I'd rather have Malik because it would be in theme with the rest of the young players that they have. I think longer term, Malik would be able to be more of an asset than Klay. But if this were Klay from 5-6 years ago, it'd be all due respect to Malik, but it'd be kind of a no-brainer because of what Klay does consistently offensively and then defensively.
But it's not. Yeah, I'm definitely with you. And I think there was like a reporting recently of Klay trying to get that like 20 to 25 mark. And that came out. A lot of people are like, man, Malik definitely better than this guy. He's going to make more. Like, this is tough. And I'm like, well, there's a decent chance that's coming from the Warriors, first of all. And like, they're in a tough spot where they just gave Draymond 4 year a million. And how is Klay supposed to feel? You know, and he's a big part of that core. So I think he's a little bit of an interesting, unique one. DeMar DeRozan.
DeMar, that's coming on the heels of us seeing him torch the Kings in the fourth quarter.
And he did the same shit to the Warriors.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And this is for a four-year deal, we're assuming?
Yeah, and I think DeMar also goes back to Chicago. But like, let's say the San Antonio situation, because I think DeMar going back to San Antonio would be cool. You got $20 million a year to spend.
Yeah.
DeMar or Malik?
Man, I'm at this point probably still going DeMar, to be honest with you.
I think I am too.
Yeah.
I think I am too. Buddy Hield? It's probably an
Buddy, easy one, give me right? Malik.
Yeah.
Respectfully to Buddy, but give me Malik.
What about D'Lo?
Oh, that's a good one.
They're similar.
Yeah, he's changed my opinion over the last few weeks. He's been trying to ball for like post All-Star break.
It's going to take a lot for me to change my opinion on D'Lo, but I get what you're saying.
I'm getting there. He'll give you the 44 piece he had the other night, and then it'll probably be back down to like 16 on not great shooting percentages.
Right. Malik's so, similar, though.
Very true. Very true. I would say give me Malik.
I think so, too. And it depends what you're looking for, but yeah, they're probably going to be about the same range. And after that, like, stop me if there's anybody that you think would get paid more than Malik, all right? Gary Trent Jr., Markelle Fultz, Malik Beasley, Tyus Jones, Gary Harris. I mean, I can keep going here. None of these are really going to do it. Monty Morris, D'Anthony Melton. It's not a great free agent market. And again, teams don't have a lot of money. Kind of keep scrolling here to make sure there's nothing I'm missing. Dennis Smith Jr. is playing good. He's backup point guard, but he's not going to make more than Malik. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. And, you know, there's an argument. Like, we kind of debated all of them except DeMar.
Mm-hmm.
Malik could be the best guard out there. And Kyle Lowry's on this list. I figured he's below it this point in his career.
You know, I'm a Heat fan, so I'm not super.
Does that mean you don't like Lowry?
I was going to say, in his first year, maybe a little bit, but past that, I'm good on Kyle.
It got real tough real fast.
It did. It definitely did.
Yeah. But it's going to be an interesting thing to monitor with Malik for sure. Like I said, Orlando worries me. San Antonio, if they're able to create a little bit more money and like just offer a bigger deal, I think could be intriguing for Malik. But I don't know. Philly don't really do it for me with Maxey. They're already there. See what they kind of do with Buddy Hield. And also Tobias is coming off the contracts for them. And it wouldn't surprise me, like OG Anunoby could be somebody they throw money at. Could they go try to throw money at Pascal Siakam, try to take away one of these sort of dudes from somewhere? So it'll definitely be interesting. And like you said, the Pistons, like, bro, Malik's not going to Detroit unless they cash him out.
And even then, bro, it's like, I could see him possibly doing that, but then also like, I don't know.
I can't. Yeah, that'd be a tough one.
And going back to the D'Lo situation too, I'm thinking about how Malik would do. Obviously, Malik's not naturally a point guard, so I would give D'Lo that advantage a little bit. He likes to shoot just as much as Malik does, but he's just feels more naturally, I would say, a little bit more of a point guard. But I'm thinking about Malik with the role that D'Lo has now, and then vice versa, D'Lo in the role that Malik has. I'm not sure D'Lo would be as efficient in that role, simply because it's just less minutes. Though he wouldn't have to share the floor as much with Bron and other ball dominant guys, but that's probably the most like up in the air situation.
Yeah, they're definitely similar. I think. Yeah, I just don't like D'Lo, bro. I've heard some stories about D'Lo off the court stuff and as a teammate and things that I can't let go of. And yeah maybe I got to get over it. But
I was in LA during his first run as a Laker in school and stuff, and
heard some stories.
Yeah, he was active. For sure.
Yeah, definitely active. And again, I don't know. Don't want to throw any dirt on D'Lo. That's fine. He's playing well, like you said. He actually has really been hooping. And I'm not gonna lie, if I'm doing a Prize Picks, right? I I don't like betting unders that much just because they could just ruin your whole, like, I might stop having fun by the end of the first quarter and be
right.
You know, but D'Lo is one where I'm like, dude, I hate to say it. I'm down to root against this guy. Like, that's so hater of me, but
I got some hater in me too, though, bro.
I know where you're coming from. There's some dudes where I'm just like, I do not like this guy. And it's nothing personal, D'Lo, but you know, that's where I'm at. But Malik's going to be around the top of the guards in this free agent class. It's not very stacked. And James Harden's on this list, by the way. I should have threw him out there. I'm kind of assuming he goes back to the Clippers.
Right.
Like, you know, Philly doesn't make sense. He sure as hell ain't going to Detroit. And, you know, like maybe Orlando cashes him out or something, but I'd be shocked. But yeah, Malik's definitely going to be towards the top of the list. You got, and hopefully he's going to be coming off a sixth man of the year. And I hope that the starting thing doesn't matter that much. He said before, like, everybody wants to start, you know, but he's very bought into his role. And if, like, closing games is the important thing, and he's doing it. And, but not every player thinks that way. So if he values starting, that's the question that gets asked all the time is, you know, is a different team going to give him a starting spot? I don't know Malik's mindset on it. Personally, it wouldn't matter to me.
Yeah. I mean, and he, like you said, he's out there when it matters most. Like, it's nice, obviously, get your name called during the intro and whatever else. But when the game is on the line, he's more often than not in the game and really involved in the game plan. He has a ball in his hand. So you could go somewhere else and possibly start and not be in that situation down the stretch. So I would definitely think about that.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I asked socials earlier if anybody had any questions. And this is my first time reading these, so stick with me if these are not great. A-Rod at The Rock for Three on Twitter. I don't notice the Kings chasing shooters off the three-point line. The scheme seems to stress not giving up penetration, overcrowding the shooters, and running them off the line. As ineffective as they've been at bothering shooters in the slightest, should they look to change? I guess I'll let you lead with that. What's your take there?
And he basically was saying, should they be looking to run people off the line?
Yeah, he's saying that he thinks the Kings are really focused on protecting the paint rather than shooters, and should they go vice versa? Which, is that even true? Like, I don't really know.
I'm actually getting ready to look at this question myself, to be honest. I need to see.
Because they give up a high percentage, but they don't give up that many. Here, I can link it for you too. They don't give up that many attempts from three relative to the rest of the league. I can make sure to pull up the number here too. But overall, I'm not sure that that's exactly their scheme. I think they are trying to run dudes off the line. They give up the eighth most, I guess, three-point attempts per game. So they are up there. Sorry, eighth least, 33.5 per game. They don't give up much, but again, that 39.8% the team's converted is worst in the league. I think that they do try to run guys off the line.
Yeah.
They try to balance everything, really, which I know every team does, but I do think a lot of it has to do with running shooters off the line, but the scheme is just, there's going to be two guys that are locked in, and those other three have to be quick with their rotations to shooters as the ball swings. And as we talked about earlier, I don't think they have great personnel for it. You know, I'm not sure that it's like a scheme thing necessarily.
I also would be really tactful with how I try to run guys off the line, because you know you don't have a great rim protector on that back line anyway. So if you are running guys off the line, that could potentially get Domas in more foul trouble. That could potentially try to force him to be something he's not as far as a rim defender. So that is a tough one where I wouldn't necessarily suggest like running guys off the line, because you either one are going to get a lot of buckets in the paint, or two, possibly putting guys in foul trouble.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. And I think that like, we're also at the point in the year where it's hard to just totally like change up your schemes like that. You can mess with things a little bit, but I think at this point you kind of roll with what you've been doing. And I know it hasn't exactly been working, but this is what they're accustomed to. They are trying to throw that zone out there more. I asked Mike about that today, and he was saying that, like, specifically the Miami and Houston game, it's because they couldn't defend the pick and roll. And so he was like, screw it, let's go to zone. That way when Şengün or Bam gets the ball near the middle of the floor, that everybody's collapsing on him and they can't make plays and sort of kill us from there. So they are trying to mix it up a little bit. Other thing I got here, this is from Threads, Meg. Curious what you guys think has happened to the secondary and tertiary scoring from last year. Seems like about 50% of the 30-point games last year were someone besides Foxy, where this year we are lost if he doesn't score 30. I mean, it's pretty much the same roster, I will say. It's like Terrence Davis is the one that stands out to me that could kind of go off, and instead they replace that with Chris Duarte, which I get, but I guess the other one would also be Kevin, right? Kevin had bigger games last year, I think, even though I'm not sure what exactly his career high is. He might have tied it earlier this year with like I think he tied it earlier this year in a game. But you know, I mean, I think it really is it going to be, it's not a 30-point night from somebody else. It's three different 15-point performances.
Yeah.
You know, between Harrison, I was talking about this with Frankie Cardicelli earlier, of like, you need one of Malik and Kevin to be on, and you need one of Harrison and Keegan to be on, really.
Yeah.
On any given night.
And right now, bro, it feels like Keegan and Kevin are the two who are like least likely to be on. They're just over like the last few weeks, I would say. And Keegan possibly is banged up. I know he's dealing with possibly like an ankle right now, but with TD or Terrence Davis, like, they essentially traded offense for defense, and now they're not really looking to utilize that defense that much in Chris Duarte. So yeah, there's it feels like there could be lack of scoring at some time at some points, but there are guys who should consistently be given at least 12 to 15, 12 to 18, maybe, who aren't right now.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I also don't think that it's a issue with this team necessarily. I think more often than not, they are able to score. And I know earlier I'm talking about they need to do it more consistently. I do agree with that, but I think it's fine to have like this, like, two, three-headed snake, because also I'm thinking eventually there's going to be another guy here. There's going to be a real three-headed snake where Malik is kind of the fourth, you know, eventually this offseason, next deadline, whenever that ends up being. And hopefully, pray to God, it's not after that. Don't think it really can be after that. I'm only cool with patient for so long.
Right.
You know, but yeah, you got anything else basketball wise before we kick it to OT?
Nah, just the last thing would be the fact that the offense is so free flowing that it may sound corny saying this, but it could kind of be any guy on any given night who gets hot, and eventually, like HB, they start running plays for someone they don't usually do down the stretch, as we saw earlier in Golden State this year. And yeah, that's kind of like my last tidbit on that last question.
Yeah, for sure. There's, you know, you don't feel great relying on them, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, they could have a night, any of these, like you said, cheesy, but Mike Brown is definitely cheesy. We get a whole lot of, you know, stereotypical basketball words here, you know, of it could be anybody on any given night, or we gotta be more consistent. We gotta play harder. By the way, people were getting on De'Aaron after last game. I think I transcribed some of his post game stuff of like, quote, was something along the lines of like, we have to be better. We know we have to be better. We have to be more consistent. Everybody's on his ass in the comments of like, I'm tired of hearing the same stuff. Like, you know, it's the same thing over and over. Somebody said he's starting to sound like Luke Walton. I'm like, you guys are crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And my take is, what else is De'Aaron supposed to say? You know what I mean? Like, I just don't know what else he's supposed to say, really. Like, there's a lot of times, and this is, I guess, a little mini rant here, but people are like, you know, media should ask this, this, or this, or and things like that. And I'm like, I don't think people realize there's certain things, and I'm sure if they thought about it, they could figure it out. You know, if you ask something, certain things, that what your answer is going to be. And sometimes it's just not worth it to ask certain things because you already know what the answer is going to be. And sometimes those questions still need to be asked and you get the very stereotypical answer. But I promise you that De'Aaron is not just like, yeah, we have to be better. And that's all they're talking about behind closed doors too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
He knows what to say to us for the most part. Like he's, are we calling De'Aaron a vet at this point? Is he not a vet?
Kind of wild, but he's, yeah. Yeah.
He's like fringe vet. So he knows how to answer these questions. He knows how to be.
If you have a rook, you're a vet. So I think it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this is like, he had a rook last year.
Yeah.
So he's definitely a vet, I guess, at this point, but he knows how to answer these questions. He's been doing it for a minute now, and he's not going to say anything that's like out of character or anything that would like ruffle feathers per se. So I think he knows how to answer these questions.
Definitely with you. And I think in general, De'Aaron does not love doing media, specifically the type of questions that are repetitive. And so I think that could come out a little bit, and the context of that doesn't always get, you know, felt through a transcribed quote, for example.
Right.
But basketball conversation over, we headed to overtime.
Let's get it.
When I ask you, video games from your childhood.
Okay. Man, I think there was like a snowboarding video game called like.
Oh, I already know what you're talking.
Yeah, it's like SSX or something like that. Is that what it is?
I forget the name.
SSX Tricky.
What'd you play it on?
Bro, that was like PS1, two, something like that.
Okay.
This was like early, like one of the first games that comes to mind. That was like my favorite before 2K, before NBA Live. I was a big PlayStation snowboarding guy.
That is a big time throwback. That game was so good, actually. And I think you literally just like go down a course, try to get the best combo, grinding on rails and shit. Yeah, it's definitely that's a great one. Classics for me, like really young childhood.
Okay.
I had a 64 for a little while, a Nintendo 64. GoldenEye was great.
Ooh.
The 007, right?
Yeah.
And Star Fox. And I had been trying to push, because De'Aaron also is a gamer, from my understanding, or at least was, and maybe that slowed down, whatever. I've been trying to push the Star Fox nickname. It's not catching on. But it is, though, right?
Yeah.
I've tried enough on socials that I'm like, all right, this isn't picking up, and now I'm just corny, but I swear, Star Fox is a great nickname for De'Aaron. After that, though, after 64, and that one I'm really young for, I will say, though, if somebody plays like the GoldenEye theme music, that brings me back. After that was definitely GameCube for me, a whole lot of Mario Kart and Smash.
I feel I'm honestly ass at Smash Bros. I'm like button mashing at a certain point, just pressing a bunch of like different shit going on, but Mario Kart that's a classic that I love.
Mario Kart's elite. And I'm shit at Smash too. My buddies would always whip my ass and I would just try to just piss people off, really. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's a theme of how I do a lot of shit, actually. I kind of play basketball the same way. If I'm getting my ass kicked, I'm like, all right, let's just try to get in this dude's head.
Also, for everyone listening, watching, whatever, you and I haven't hooped at this point. So I think we really need to push for just a group media hoop session soon.
So I was actually talking about this recently with Matt George and Deuce Mason, and they were down. They were like, yes, we need to coordinate this.
Oh, man.
And I'm super down. So I think it's going to be off season. So yeah. I'm going to get back in the gym a little bit. So I'm not just, you know, totally haven't got up shots in who right. knows how long. And then all of a sudden going out and doing this. So I'm sure somebody's going to have a camera and so, like, just not trying to be the dude that goes viral on King's Twitter. Cause I got
bro
crossed over by Deuce Mason. You know what I mean?
We damn near got a live stream this one. We might have to have people in attendance the whole nine.
Be so fun, actually.
I don't know. So Matt Hoops?
I don't know that he does like that much anymore, but he's tall, you know.
I was about to say I'm ISO on Matt Hoops.
That's crazy. I'm saying people don't believe I play physical, bro. I will turn around and post people up for sure.
Okay.
I play physical, bro. Rondo was my dude growing up. That was my favorite player on that Celtics team, and I play like Rondo, bro. I'm telling you, I got all the behind the back moves going on. You catch me 2-on-1 in transition with the ball, I'm cooking. Other dude running with me, I got all of them. I got the fake behind the back.
Yeah.
That you actually go up for the layup. I got the show. You know, you kind of show it to him and then turn around with the fake. That's a favorite. Although I will say my percentage on that layup probably not great because it's a weird little push shot after. You know, it's not the easiest shot. I also got the just straight behind the back because you can't have the fake without actually having the behind the back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I got that angle down in transition where a defender running with me and that can hit the other dude running, you know? And the other one that was the last edition that is maybe one of my favorite Rondo ones outside of that, like fake. That somebody, by the way, on the Kings did that a couple games ago. I think it was De'Aaron.
He definitely did. He got a big in the air and then like turned around.
Yeah. Is the you look like you're going to throw the behind the back, but instead you just throw it in front to yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fire. So all of the above, I'm telling you, catch me 2-on-1. I'll be down there cherry picking and cooking.
Yeah, bro. That's hilarious. I don't blame you, but we definitely got to get a media hoop session this summer for sure.
I'm super down. Leo, look, he scares me a little bit because Leo be balling all the time. He plays a lot. He's been trying to get me to play like since I came into Kings Media like 3 years ago or whatever.
Okay.
I'm constantly like, yeah, you know, like hit me up. I'll let you know. And I'm like, no, bro, like I'm not about to go out here when I haven't hooped in a while and go embarrass myself, you know? So,
if this is just twos and we're not doing like 5-on-5, I might take me and you versus the field.
I'm really down. Same.
Yeah.
Same. I'm also just a confident dude. Like,
same.
I swear I'm winning, bro. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I
think the same thing, bro. I think I'm giving you buckets.
But actually, you know who would cook is Kenny. D'Lo Casey Kenny.
Kenny.
Have you ever seen, you know, Pros vs. Joes?
I think I've heard about this. Yeah.
Yeah. He was one of the Joes one time. And I think he hit a game winner. it's crazy video. But Kenny's a bucket, bro. Kenny's a bucket for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to make it happen.
I am super down. I'm super down. And we've talked about this before, but it's never actually been coordinated. So
we're gonna
spearhead this thing and make this happen.
Let's do it.
And hopefully it's content that's good for us rather than just totally shits on our
own. Oh, man. You know the video of Denzel? He's like, I'm leaving with something.
Nah. Oh, yeah.
I'm 100% leaving with something.
Yeah. I'm getting one highlight.
Yeah.
In one highlight. Somebody clipped that and sent it to me.
Hell yeah.
I'm definitely with you. But yeah, I think that's all we got. Unless you got anything else here.
This was another great pod in the books to me.
There we go. Yeah. So appreciate everybody tuning in, whether YouTube or the audio side. Definitely leave comments on the YouTube side. Always happy to take questions for each next episode. And appreciate everybody listening. Be sure to subscribe and like, helps a lot and keeps you up to date with any upcoming episodes. So appreciate everybody, and you'll catch Hunter and I in the next couple of days here.